Welcome to International Dispute Negotiation, your guide to resolving disputes everywhere.
This is Mike McElrath, and this podcast is about different ways of accepting and managing the risks of dispute resolution, presenting them through the eyes of experts from different countries and backgrounds.
Yeah, this always happens. A case comes and we're not ready for it technically. We can't support it, so we end up having to hire a lot of consultants or something like that. And we say, boy, you know, if we just had a little bit of something in-house, we could have saved a ton of money on that.
Ever wonder how a technology company like General Electric might use technology when it finds itself in disputes? For example, it might harvest information from hundreds of in-house lawyers from around the world about ways to handle the dispute, systematically monitor the retention and payment of outside counsel and ensure their compliance with company dispute procedures, unbundle legal services, distributing tasks to the most efficient providers no matter where they're located, or use microscopic nanobots to review millions of documents before they're even created. Okay, I made up the last part about using nanotechnology, but everything else is already in the job description of my colleague, Jay Bretz, who heads legal technology at GE. Before coming to his current position, Jay was a litigation lawyer, first at a law firm and then with GE, so he can't say he doesn't appreciate the problems we litigators face. In this first of two episodes of IDN with Jay, he discusses the state of the art in disputes management from a company perspective and how adoption of technology is tied to underlying business objectives.
My job is to manage all the global technology initiatives for the lawyers of GE. As you know, we have about a 1,200 lawyer internal law department, and managing those, just the projects to get those lawyers to do their jobs, doing their jobs effectively, is kind of a big enough job for me.
Right. And those are 1,200 lawyers around the world?
Yes, global.
Let's focus, and I know your job covers all technologies relating to legal, but let's talk about those that currently relate to dispute resolution.
For me, you know, one of my challenges when I came in was it was very difficult to have a robust, trustable list of all the cases to which GE was a party. And in order to be able to measure something, first you have to be able to track it and put it on a list. So one of the things, where we've tried to do that is in rolling out an e-billing system to make it so you can't pay a lawyer without going through the e-billing system. And when you do that, I immediately have visibility into it. So that's one of our goals, is to use the choke point of having to pay a firm to be able to track the all the cases we have. When you dig further down into that, when I look at what that system should do, it shouldn't just be a billing system. It should be a matter management system, because one of the things an essential insight I had at a certain point was that one of the main avenues of communication between the law firm and the client is the legal invoice. That is, no matter what, you're going to communicate via invoice at some point, whether no other communication takes place, that's going to be it. So that's what drives that. And then the other thing is to look at it as, and this is a more sort of forward-leaning concept, is I also look at the legal invoice as a collaborative document, rather than as something that's just pitched over the fence. It's something where we're going to discuss that invoice. And if you think about those things, you think the task of invoicing is very much like matter management, where we want to collaborate, we want to communicate, we want to memorialize that, so we save that information.
So one area is obviously this relationship with the external lawyers, the interface between the internal lawyers and the external lawyers.
The other side of that is matter management shouldn't be an additional burden on the GE lawyer or on the outside lawyer. We should be able to pull the metrics we need by you just doing your job in the system. So it should be a happy side effect that it makes it easier for the lawyers on the street to pay their bills and to communicate with their outside counsel. But by the way, by doing it in the system like that, we're able to get the metrics we need and enforce some of the rules we need. Because when we get to dispute resolution, you know, we can use tools like this to enforce and gauge our metrics on things like early case assessments.
Right. For example, we have a requirement that it's not a secret that we have to do early case assessments in all major cases.
Yes.
And have to be completed within 90 days.
Yes. And now we're getting to the point where we can enforce that on certain classes of cases. We can start to say, okay, you're gonna start to have trouble getting your bills paid.
Or you're not going to be paid.
That too. I'm being a little diplomatic.
But, that's the rule.
Yeah,
Do the early case assessment or you don't get paid.
Exactly. And, you know, that's the way to get people's attention. And that should work. And
well, we should note, though, it's a condition also of the engagement that they're going to perform an early case assessment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's
it's not like we surprise them on, hey, day 91, you didn't do the early case assessment. Oh, I'm not going to pay your bills.
No, there's nothing new here. I've got to do an early case assessment. No, you should not be acting surprised about that. There's a lot of things you could be surprised about, but no, that's always been a requirement. So that's kind of, to me, what drives some of the things technology helps with dispute resolution is pushing that early case assessment.
By the way, just for sake of clarity, when we say early, at least when I say early case assessment, then I think most GE lawyers, and not just within GE, other companies as well, and I think CPR has issued guidelines on how to conduct early case assessments.
Oh, yeah.
It's an industry term. It is, assessing the outcome and the cost of a dispute in an early point in the dispute so that you can settle out or at least litigate with an idea of what the end is going to be like.
Yes. Thank you for clarifying that. It kind of does blend in, because when you have good access into the good insight into the data, that's a very good place to start. It can start to tell you how much it's going to cost. It can start to tell you, the things we ask, you can start to figure out what's your best document, what's your worst document, what's your first witness, and what is he going to say? These questions that really kind of help you form your strategy and help you not only form your strategy, but also help you decide, well, maybe we ought to talk to the business guys and bring some of these things to their attention and say, well, are you sure you want to push this hard? Because, a lot of times, yes, if we'd have known some of that stuff 6 months ago, we would have settled then.
Right. So the early case assessment is not a use of technology, but you're using technology to drive something.
Yes.
Like early case assessments.
Yes.
Where else do you have it in technology in the litigation area?
Like I said, so for collecting.
I know very well where some of them are because you've been hounding us to become in compliance with them. But let's pretend that I haven't received some emails reminding me that we need to get our stuff into the system.
Yeah. So the main thing is through the e-billing system, enforcing the early case assessment and some of the reporting functions we have there. As I mentioned, we do have the tools that support that early case assessment from an early factual analysis standpoint. So we've got systems that will, help you collect your data from your witnesses, help you process that and help you review that in a quick, sort of a quick and dirty way to figure out what's going on.
And we have those within the company, tools.
We don't rely
on external companies.
That's a perennial question. Based on volume, we'll use external companies. But if you're talking about figuring out an early case assessment, we do that internally. And we have the platforms to do that. Once you start talking about doing a production review of 100 custodians, you've got 50 or 60 contract attorneys doing it, then we start to think about farming that out. But in general, for this kind of quick review, it's also important for us, even when you're doing that early case assessment, because it helps you to identify your keyword cuts. So if you're going to do keyword cuts on documents and things like that, it helps you to identify those and go into that discussion with a little bit of a heads up as to what the key issues are going to be. So that's another place where technology has come to the fore and enabled us some. We also have a system that manages our legal holds because we need
explain,
to
explain what a legal hold is, because that may not be clear to a lot of people.
A legal hold is when we have a reasonable anticipation of litigation, we've got an obligation arises in us to not allow the deletion of any information subject to that hold. So,
and that's in the United States.
That is in the United States, but you know, I mean, for us, the issue is the extraterritorial application of e-discovery laws. I mean, a U.S. court frequently takes the position vis-a-vis a discovery issue. That's, you know, if you can't do that in that country, well, that's not the court's problem. That's your problem, and you figure out a way to handle it. So
if you have a U.S. litigation, you can globally implement it through an electronic hold system.
Yes.
Hey, everybody freeze. Don't delete your emails.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And you've got to be sensitive to to the various jurisdictions' privacy concerns. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of current talk about a lot of those things.
And so this tracks how many people have received these messages and have been told and when, and I guess also when it's not in effect anymore.
Correct. Which is a big part of it, releasing the hold. When we're finally done, we know who we sent it out to, so we know who we can release from the hold, so that then they can go ahead and go about their business and return their documents to their regularly scheduled deletion schedules.
Right. And then you've also got electronic databases, I think, that you manage as well, you know, for the research databases.
Yes.
Lexis, Westlaw, sort of systems.
Those things, I mean, to me, those are just part of the standard. You know, you should get something like that just as part of your basic kit for being a GE lawyer, is being able to do some basic research.
Access the law that you need to, right.
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, the thing with that is a lot of sources of that law have moved to be free, available via the internet. So,
and a lot of the providers don't have global databases. And so there's one of the challenges you face constantly is that the leading providers don't have, let's say, I don't know, European law or the leading providers in the U.S., and you have to buy from somebody else if you want French law or you want Italian law. You have to go out to different...
That is a pain point for me, because some of the non-U.S. markets are not as competitive as the U.S. market in that. So I don't have as many providers. I don't have competition driving the cost down. I think some of the European law firm market also hasn't been pushing those providers to be as competitive as the U.S. law firm and corporate market has. So I think that's coming. That's just going to come with time. There'll be more providers in that market, and the prices will come down.
Okay. Where else do you have technology moving around in litigation today?
I don't know. Let's see. I mean, those are the...
We have social networking within the company.
Yes, we do.
The litigation lawyers are all connected, and we...
So we share
a lot of
practices. We friend each other. Rather than sending out the email, who knows a good arbitrator here, we can now... put that question up on the litigator's blog.
Or we can have a wiki.
We have a legal wiki, which is not as there's a lot of questions about that. People are always a little bit reticent to post to things like that.
Well, for example, one of the things we talked about doing is an arbitrator or mediator wiki.
Yes.
Database or wiki, tracking that internally. I mean, that's something that, you know, I think law firms are doing it. Why not us?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it exists now. You could go ahead and put arbitrator information right into the wiki. It's already there. It's based on, you know, the good thing about that is that wiki that we have is based on open source tools, so it's freely available. It's the same software that runs Wikipedia.
You just write up, I use Joe Smith as a mediator, his services were X or Y, and you can put that up into the wiki, and the next person who uses that...
Yeah, they can search on it. I mean, you know, you can group things by jurisdiction or by location or anything like that, or even by the same way it works. The same way everybody knows how Wikipedia works,
right.
So it works the same way as that.
That's knowledge sharing within the company.
Yeah, which is always difficult in a company our size and as diverse as ours. You know, the holy grail of knowledge management, which has been batted around for the last 20 years, just has proved somewhat unattainable.
Next week, we conclude the interview with Jay by discussing trends and predictions for the future of litigation technology. You've been listening to International Dispute Negotiation. This podcast is presented by the International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution, CPR. CPR is a membership-based nonprofit organization that promotes excellence and innovation in public and private dispute resolution, providing an international resource for the avoidance, management, and resolution of business disputes. For further information about CPR, or to download archived versions of this podcast, go to www.cpradr.org. Questions about this podcast or the issues discussed can be addressed to idn@cpradr.org. The music of Note Noir is used with permission.